Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's stand up for the biggest international football tournament held here in the United States since the 1994 World Cup. VOA sports reporter Jonah Haskell joins us now with a preview of the Copa America Centenario. Sporty greetings, Jonah.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The 45th Copa America on its 100th anniversary kicks off this Friday, and it's no normal Copa. The annual tournament usually pits just South American teams against each other, but this year, with the USA as host, it will include six teams from North America as well. U.S. men's national team coach Jurgen Klinsmann is very excited about hosting such a high-profile tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a privilege that we have to host this Copa America, usually only played in South America. And it's the equivalent, it's basically the same as the European Championship this summer in Europe. So it's the top nations from the continent basically going for the big, big title. So after the World Cup, this is the second biggest soccer tournament in the world. And for us, it's obviously a huge honor to host it. And also North America and South America playing it out. We can measure ourselves with the big, big names from down south. So it's huge. It's huge. For the American soccer fan, it's a little bit difficult to understand right away. But I think, you know, once the opening game is played, people start to realize, holy moly, this is pretty much the rehearsal for a World Cup and hopefully for a World Cup soon in the United States.
The four groups for the tournament have already been chosen, as Group A will feature the hosts USA, as well as Costa Rica, Paraguay, and Colombia. Group B includes 2014 World Cup host Brazil alongside Ecuador, Haiti, and Peru. And Group C includes North American powerhouse Mexico, as well as Uruguay, Jamaica, and Venezuela. Finally, Group D will feature Lionel Messi and Argentina, 2015 Copa winners Chile, and as well as Panama and Bolivia. Unfortunately, Brazil's young star Neymar will miss out on the tournament as he has elected to play in the Olympics in August instead, and Uruguay's Luis Suarez will potentially miss out due to a back injury. But the stars will still be out in force, and fans will be able to see Messi, Di Maria, James, Kaká, Agüero, Chicharito, and many more in action. Despite the stiff competition, Klinsmann is feeling good after two pre-tournament friendly wins over Ecuador and Bolivia.
With these two games, Ecuador and Bolivia, I think, you know, we have two opponents that teach us a lot. But I think after these two games, we have a real good feeling to where we are right now and hopefully a lot of confidence to go into the tournament.
American midfielder and team captain Michael Bradley says U.S. players will also be looking forward to the tournament and hope to use the opportunity to show fans what they can do against world-class competition.
People are excited. I think if we can play in a way and if we can play in a certain way and get some good results, I think that excitement is only gonna build in a huge way. And so I think for all of us, we understand the opportunity. These tournaments played in your home country don't come around very often, and so we're excited and we're gonna see if we can give everything to make it a special few weeks.
The opening match in Santa Clara, California, kicks off on Friday evening local time and will pit Bradley and his USA teammates against James Rodriguez and Colombia. The group stage concludes on June 14th, and the knockout stages, featuring the top two teams from each group, are set to begin on June 16th. The Copa America final will be played in New York on June 26th. I'm VOA's Jonah Haskell. Back to you, Sonny.
Thanks, Jonah. The Spanish football club Real Madrid has been celebrating a record-extending 11th European title. And with all those trophies comes a lot of wealth. Forbes magazine has Real at the top of its list of the 50 richest sports clubs. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, VOA sports reporter Ben Cento tells us more.
At the top of the list are Spanish football powers Real Madrid and Barcelona. Forbes says Real is worth more than $3.6 billion, and Barcelona is valued at over $3.5 billion. The two clubs waged a fierce battle for this season's La Liga trophy, the top prize in Spanish football. Barca edged Real 91 points to 90. Michael Ozanian is the executive director of Forbes Media and the managing editor of Forbes Sports Money. He says financial health is critical to a team's signing success.
But it's very important to a team's bottom line and their ability to sign and keep the best players. So if you look at the top players like Ronaldo and Messi, it's no surprise that Real and Barcelona are consistently sitting atop La Liga as well as making the Champions League.
Big talent means big TV audiences. MediaPro bought the rights to televise La Liga matches, paying just over $2 billion for their three-year deal. Ozanian says that TV deals are a driving force behind a team's income and enhance their ability to attract talent.
Spain, it gets a lot of TV money. That's what helps it sign players like Ronaldo and Messi. If you look at the new players going to Manchester City, very important because Manchester City this year is going to qualify for next year's Champions League. Therefore, they know they're going to have the money so they could sign a top player to be able to keep him, and that should perpetuate their good performance. So it almost gets to be a vicious cycle.
If a team makes it to the top, it strongly tips the odds in their favor of attracting talent, as we see with underdog English Premier League champion Leicester. According to Michael Ozanian of Forbes, Leicester could catch the eyes of some well-known players.
I think next year, Leicester, because it won the Premier League this year and are going to qualify for the Champions League, will almost definitely replace Newcastle and crack our top 20 next year. I also think there's a very good chance next year that Barcelona could surpass Real Madrid as the most valuable team because Barcelona is very close to finalizing plans and beginning their project for a new stadium and a renovated mixed-use entertainment ground around the stadium. That should enable them to increase their revenue significantly and probably surpass Real.
Ozanian says it's important for clubs to invest in their facilities. The very successful American football team, the New England Patriots, and their owner Robert Kraft have done just that. They built Patriot Place, made up of shops, eateries, bars, and anywhere else sports fans would like to spend money. He says that a team like AC Milan and its owner Silvio Berlusconi need to do something similar. As they say, spend money to make money. He says they've been losing money lately and should invest in some new facilities to get them back where they once were.
AC Milan is a great example of a team today that was like Manchester City or Chelsea 5-10 years ago. It's an undervalued brand. The team has been losing a lot of money. Berlusconi needs a new stadium. And he doesn't want to put in any of his personal wealth, I should say any more of his personal wealth, to fund losses and to build a new stadium.
Among football clubs, AC Milan is ranked number 12 overall, worth $825 million. The Italian team had plans to build a new stadium in time for the 2018-2019 season, but those plans were scrapped. Berlusconi says he is too in love with the current stadium, San Siro, to leave. San Siro is 90 years old. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Ben Cento.
The Voice of America. VOA.
The Sunny Side of Sports welcomes your comments. You can send me email at sunny@voanews.com. Sunny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237. Let's open the Sunny Side of Sports mailbag now. John Samvura sent me a letter from Musanze, northern province of Rwanda. John heads up a Voice of America listeners club in Musanze, And he says he and other club members greatly enjoy the sunny side of sports. And John sends warm greetings and sporty best wishes to all VOA listeners. Thanks for writing from Rwanda, John. Michael Monyenyembe sent me another letter from Kitwe, Zambia. Michael writes that he's looking forward to the 2018 World Cup football tournament to be hosted by Russia. And Michael also sends greetings to all Voice of America employees. Thanks for writing from Zambia, Michael. Well, the San Francisco Bay Area in Northern California is home to two sports teams competing for top honors this year. The reigning champion Golden State Warriors are back in the NBA Finals, and the San Jose Sharks, the area's NHL ice hockey team, is taking a run at hockey's top prize, the Stanley Cup. This is the first year in the Sharks' 25-year franchise history they've made it to the playoff finals. Tonight, they face off against Eastern Conference rivals the Pittsburgh Penguins in Game 2 of the Best of 7 series. VOA's Doug Bernard follows all things hockey here, and he joins me now right here in Studio 22. Sporty greetings, Doug.
I do, and great to be here. Thanks so much.
Doug, we've reached the Stanley Cup Finals.
We have.
But how did we get here?
It's hard to believe this all began in September. Here we are in June now, 30 teams all competing. We're down now to the top two. Now, I think really some big surprises in this season. And I think this season will be remembered from some extraordinary play really across the league. Each team seemed to step it up a little bit with one or two minor exceptions. So, but here's the surprise. You look at teams like the Chicago Blackhawks or the LA Kings, which have really been trading the cup back and forth between each other for the last 5 years or so, they didn't even, you know, make it out of the semifinals.
Mm.
And then a team like the Washington Capitals, which had the single best record in the NHL by far this year, they couldn't get out of the semifinals either. So now we're left with two teams, the Sharks, as you say, and the Pens, and two teams with very different styles, very different teams. So this is really setting up to be an exciting playoff.
Doug, what can you tell our VOA sports fans about the Pens and the Sharks battling it out?
Sure. Now, you've mentioned some of it already, so let's start with the Sharks, for example. Now, they were an expansion team some years ago, 25 years old. They've never taken a run at the Cup. That doesn't mean that they don't have some skilled veterans on their team. Now, this is mostly a young team, but, you know, you're looking at some of the guys like Patrick Marleau, Joe Thornton. You know, they've been with the team for a decade or longer, you know, and so they are hungry for this run at the Cup. There's some other standouts as well we'll get to in just a quick second. I think so far for the San Jose Sharks, the real standout star has been the captain, Pavelski. He has just been the go-to guy and really heading up one of the major offensive lines that we've seen. It's just everything seems to work when that guy's on the ice. So that's the San Jose Sharks. Let's turn to the Eastern Conference. Pittsburgh Pens, an older team. They're some 49 years old, so almost twice as old. A storied team owned by Mario Lemieux, one of the great figures in hockey. They've had three cups so far. They're trying to make it a fourth. So this is not new to them. And this is a team that is front-loaded with speedy superstars. Everybody knows Sidney Crosby. But you've got, you know, any number of other players there as well, ready to fight this out. So it's a bit of an older team. Again, I think on their side, you could say, I think I'm actually going to kind of give hats off to two people. First off, the coach, Mike Sullivan. He came in this year. I wrote down this team. The last several seasons were a disaster. One guy referred to it. He said, quote, Mike Johnston, who was the previous coach, was a dumpster fire at a chemical plant. That sort of really said it. So Sullivan, he was a pro himself. He played many games, and he really seems to have quieted this team down and focused their talent. I'd also have to say that as opposed to some of the stars that you would think of, like a Sidney Crosby, the real standout in this postseason for the Pens has been Phil Kessel. Now, that might have caused some laughter a year ago. Kessel, a longtime Maple Leaf, he was a great player then, but he really seemed to fizzle and fade. Nobody was expecting much from him. They were so wrong in this playoff season.
Doug, undoubtedly in a Stanley Cup final, the most crucial position is goalie. How do the netminders match up?
Yeah, there is no question, as you say, that the guys between the pipes, I think, are the most important players, perhaps in the major pro sports, even maybe more important than the quarterback in the NFL or the pitcher in Major League Baseball player, because they can really make or break a season and make or break a game, given that these are such low-scoring affairs, right? So going with the Sharks, both these guys are very new. The Sharks goalie is Martin Jones. He's a young guy. He's got a 919 save percentage so far in postseason. That's pretty good, but it's not necessarily as good as you might want because, again, you know, he has let a couple softies by, and so that's raised some concerns. But he's clearly the standout of the two or three goalies I think they have in the Sharks. So going to the Pens. This was a real shocker. They have, for the long time, the Pens have had a guy named Marc-Andre Fleury. He is as veteran as they come. He is, I think, clearly will be remembered as one of the greatest goalies in hockey history. So he was the lead goalie, but through the season, he really started to sputter. And so the Pens coach made the decision. They replaced him with a young guy, Matt Murray, real surprise, but so far this guy, he's got a 929 save percentage in postseason, so he's outperforming the Sharks goalie. He did have some trouble with the Tampa Bay Lightning. That caused some concern. There was even some thoughts like, you know, maybe we need to bring Fleury back or something, but they're sticking with him for now.
Talking Stanley Cup Finals with VOA's Doug Bernard. Doug, what does the style of play from the Pens and the Sharks tell you about how this series might go?
A couple things. I think, first off, sometimes you may hear the term special teams. Special teams are those that come out, like, during a power play when there's been one of the players has been removed for a penalty from the ice, or the power kill, which is really trying to stop the onslaught of the greater number from the other side. Clearly, so far in this series, the Sharks have the advantage. The power play is absolutely lethal. So if the Pens want a shot at this, they're going to have to figure a way to shut it down. They haven't done that yet. The Pens are a muscular team, but they are a speedy team, and they have no problem throwing their weight around. Certainly, you know, the Sharks are no pushovers, but the Pens get the advantage there. But very quickly, I think overall, as I look at these two teams, and if I've watched them over the season, for the Sharks, I would say consistency. They have played consistently well and consistently the same hockey, the coach's style, throughout the whole season. Now, that can be an advantage because once you get to the playoffs, your nerves get rattled, whatnot. But if you know what you're doing, you've done it 100 times before, that makes it easier for that team. For the Penn side, they are clearly the team that has the momentum right now. I mean, they slumped in the first probably two-thirds of the season, really started to kind of make a comeback, and they have looked unstoppable since I would say March or so, and the beginning of the postseason playoffs. So if it's going to come, that's, I think, what it's going to come down to. Is it going to be sort of consistency, you know, kind of working at it, workman style, that gets the team through, or is it going to be the team with the hot wheels on their skates that takes them to victory?
Finally, Doug, you said the Pens had the momentum. Do you see them lifting the cup for a fourth time?
That's a difficult question for me because I really don't like the Pittsburgh Penguins. but you know what? I say this. Look, I think the sympathetic favorite here are the Sharks. They've never won. You know, it's a great team. That would be a great story. We always like that kind of comeback. And we're going to see some more of that, I think, in the play coming up. But if I were actually to put, you know, dollars on it, I think at this point the Pens really look like they're going to take it. I can't believe I'm saying that, but there it is.
Voice of America's Doug Bernard. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you, Sonny.
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Wednesday?
Well, in the past, we've talked about these kind of national days. Usually it's nationally focused, like National, you know, Baseball Day or National this, that, or the other day. Well, today it's not a national day. It's a global day. In fact, it's hashtag Global Running Day.
Global Running Day.
The whole world is running today, and the whole world's talking about it on social media. And just about everybody is talking about it in one form or another. And I say that because we have a lot of people posting pictures where they're out for their morning run or they're on the treadmill. But then we're seeing people post pictures of their dogs that are running, apparel companies that are advertising the latest in running shorts and shoes, sports teams that are showing their players running in various sports. And then my favorite, all the entertainment clips that are being incorporated. Forrest Gump from the movie Forrest Gump running, you know, run, Forrest, run. So we're seeing clips like that being put out. But really, people are just jumping on this any way they can.
Are any Olympians running on Global Running Day?
There are. In fact, there's one in particular, Meb Keflezighi, that, of course, the famous marathon runner. He's up in Boston. He's with the people who host the Boston Marathon. They're, of course, very big on Global Running Day. It's a big day for them. So he's been up there. He's been running around Boston, and they've been taking photos of that as he's been doing so. But he's been advertising that on social media. There are others, I'm sure, that are putting up similar messages on Global Running Day. Most of them probably long-distance runners or runners in some capacity, but other athletes as well, saying, you know, part of my training, even though I'm out there on, you know, playing basketball or baseball or what have you, even hockey, you know, it's the cross-training, always going out there and running.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. What's trending and tweeting out there right now, Andrew, in terms of sporty social media?
Well, we were talking about Meb being an Olympian, and there's a big Olympic story that the International Boxing Association is going to allow professional boxers to fight in Rio. Mm. And this has really set off a social media debate. You have a lot of people saying, well, there goes amateur boxing. You know, the part of the fun of boxing and part of the opportunity for a lot of these amateurs was to get to the Olympics. And now that they're going to have to face professionals, those dreams are being quashed for a lot of these amateur boxers. But others who are supportive of this are pointing out, yeah, it's great. They're including professional boxers. They only have about 10 weeks, actually less than 10 weeks to qualify before the first fight takes place in Rio for the Olympics. So they're really not giving them a lot of time. So even though they're saying, oh, they're allowed to compete in Rio in about 10 weeks when the Olympics starts, they're saying it's probably not going to happen for most professional boxers because they just don't have the time to get the training together, get qualified, and get there to the Olympics. But it is this back and forth on social media.
So we won't be seeing big-name boxers like Manny Pacquiao or Klitschko fighting in Rio.
I don't think so, just because of the short time frame, and I don't think that they would want to put their training in jeopardy or their health in jeopardy, really trying to rush to get ready for the Olympics, but maybe in 4 years, that might be when we see some of the big names participating.
Kind of a controversial issue, Andrew, because some have said that a professional prize fighter has a lot more experience than, say, some young teenager, you know, amateur ranks, and that, you know, they have the advantage, and that the amateur could get hurt. Yeah. Going up against a professional.
Oh, yeah. It's not just the fact that the amateurs, you know, might not be able to win a medal. It's that they could be in danger. And I think that over the next 4 years, you know, in the next 10 weeks, I don't think we're going to see too many professional boxers get to Rio. But from the next 4 years until the 2020 Olympics, I think this is going to be a conversation they have. And they may have to reevaluate that decision or at least put some caveats on it.
And in terms of caveats, I think they need to probably maybe offer some prize money to get the professionals there.
Yeah,
in the ring.
That might be a good thing, a good way to do it. But who knows? We'll see over the next 4 years. But going from Olympics now to another trending topic, this is a fun one. Un-Olympics. Hashtag my un-Olympic event would be. Now, this is a hashtag that's popped up. It's been talked about all on social media where people are saying, well, I may not be going to the Olympics. I may not be a great athlete, but what would my un-Olympic event would be? So people saying rock, paper, scissors contest, staring contests. I think synchronized napping was one that I saw. So some funny ones. And to bring it back to hockey, what Doug was talking about, the NHL on NBC. NBC is the network that's airing the Stanley Cup finals. They're saying growing and maintaining an incredible beard, which, of course, is something you have to have. You're in the hockey playoffs, of course. All through the playoffs, you grow out your beard, and there are some very impressive ones. So there are some players who would maybe gold medal in beard growing.
Andrew Palcheski, the clean-shaven
yes.
Andrew Palcheski, Voice of America social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the June 1st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Vital blood service for millions of Ethiopians will improve thanks to a new cooperative effort between the United States and Ethiopia. Ethiopian Minister of Health, Dr. Kedisa Birhan Admasu, and USAID Ethiopia Mission Director Dennis Weller recently led a groundbreaking ceremony in Addis Ababa to kick off construction for the National Blood Transfusion Service Center. The new center will provide the Ministry of Health with additional capacity to receive donations, screen and process blood products, and distribute life-saving products to serve approximately 26 million Ethiopians. The 5,300-square-meter facility will house the administrative headquarters for blood transfusion services, providing a permanent home for offices, training, meetings, and document storage. One of the primary reasons for strengthening and expanding blood transfusion services in Ethiopia is to reduce the prevalence of HIV in the blood supply. The new center will enable the staff to properly screen blood for HIV and other infections after it is collected. Speaking at the event, Mr. Weller said a key reason for improving blood transfusion services in Ethiopia is to reduce the number of maternal deaths. Hemorrhaging continues to be one of the leading causes of maternal mortality in Ethiopia, and many of these deaths can be prevented through blood transfusions. Mr. Weller commended the Ministry of Health's contributions to the many months of planning, design, and the beginning of the construction of the new National Blood Transfusion Service Center. The capacity of this facility will enable the ministry to meet more than 25% of the World Health Organization's recommended annual blood collection goals for Ethiopia. Additionally, the center will oversee the distribution of blood products, which will expand access to blood transfusion services throughout rural and urban areas of Ethiopia. The $5 million construction cost is funded by the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. USAID is expected to complete construction of the facility in 2 years. The United States is proud to work with its longtime partner, Ethiopia, to help improve this and other health services for the people of Ethiopia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this, whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.